It's wonderful how the American people display their sportsmanship.
Welcome, Hoosier fans. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. Whenever you are listening to this, this is the Often Daunted Podcast, and I am your host, Burke White. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Can't appreciate it enough, as I always do on the show. I got to start up top. If you haven't given me a follow across any of the socials, I'm across all socials at Often Daunted. Go ahead and give me a follow. If you like the show, after all is said and done with this episode, go ahead and feel free to give me a subscribe. Doesn't hurt you none, just helps out my ego. If you like the show enough to leave a five-star review, that's much appreciated. If you hate it enough to leave anything else, please forget I said anything. As we do each episode of the Often Daunted Podcast here on the off-season schedule, I will be getting into the Indiana news before getting into the Big Ten and the news around the landscape of college basketball before diving into my Burke's Big Five, this week being the Burke's Big Five famous Big Ten alumni. You know, people that I think really stand out as achievers amongst Big Ten alumni. After that little mini segment, we'll get into my main segment. For this week's segment, I have the honor, the privilege, the joy of having on an individual. This individual is he's the man behind a certain handle that is Trey Knows Ball on X. If you've given him a follow, you know it's good Indiana nostalgia all the time. That's how he got me hooked. He hooked me in with just posting Indiana feel good posts on X. I loved it, and behind that was a guy with takes, with thoughts, with a certified ball knower. You know, we didn't get into the nitty gritty of the X's and O's on this episode. I just enjoyed having Trey on and just catching up on what this Indiana team has done in the offseason to take the strides they need to be true contenders in the season to come for all of us. And it was just really great to meet the guy, to hear the voice behind that Twitter handle that has given me so much nostalgic joy. But I'm really excited to see what he can post once this season gets rolling with just expectations as high as they are. With all that being said, it was awesome having him on, and just me and him, that our discussion on the Hoosiers for next season, on some of the Hoosiers last season, that all that for you at the segment. And then we will get you on out of here with a Hoosier history hit as we usually do. All that on this episode. So without further ado, let's just get right into that Indiana news. Since our last time recording, Indiana and the athletic administration has moved Hep's Rock. They have taken Hep's Rock from the stadium, and they have placed it at the end of the walk. I truly appreciate this move by the football program. I do. You know, we got to remember our history, but at the end of the day, you guys, our history has not been, other than the goodwill that many of our coaches have brought to Bloomington, like, the actual football is nothing to, it's nothing to be lauded. It's time to, you know, it's time to really dig up the foundation and make an identity for this program. I like that they're putting it at the walk. The players will still get to slap it. It'll still be part of it. But Kurt's doing his own thing. He needs to create his own environment, and the Rock being outside just has to happen. Nobody may have asked for my thoughts on, Indiana football doing anything with their holy Rock, but nonetheless, there's my 2 cents. I will say that cruel of NCAA football not to, you know, recognize the shift, not to be up in the know of Indiana football enough to know that, in the game, right after he scored a touchdown, just sitting there waiting for you to go on and celebrate with behind the goalpost. But alas, it's going to be on the outside this season. So, yep, latest on Hep's Rock. And hopefully we see an update come to the Memorial Stadium environment. Doubt it. EA, get on it. Congrats to Indiana baseball and the fine young men who make up that squad who got the chance to celebrate the MLB draft process this week. Indiana showed plenty of representation in the MLB draft this year as the Indiana Hoosiers led the Big Ten in the 2024 draft with 6 players drafted and a program record 4 picks in the first 5 rounds. This Indiana baseball team, I remember one time when I was in school, it was like they were just turning the corner. Like, do we have a baseball team? And that's when the program really got rolling. It's great to see where they're at. Where they're at, I mean, they actually have actual hype heading into next season. Baseball America put out their way too early preseason rankings for the upcoming college baseball season. Yes, we have those early, way too early as well. But nonetheless, Baseball America placed the Indiana Hoosiers at number 21 for next season. You know, there's going to be a lot of hype heading into it, and it's awesome to see. These guys deserve it. They've created a program that warrants eyes on it. Well done, boys. Speaking of that draft, I just want to say personal shout-out to IU Slugger and Fort Wayne native Carter Matheson. Him and Luke Good, both Homestead guys, Southwest Fort Wayne, shout-out. I'll always pull for someone from the south side of Fort Wayne, even if they go to Homestead, you know, the haves, if you will. Now on to something, you know, a little basketball related. Indiana and Adidas have reached an agreement extending that apparel contract for another 10 years to the tune of $52 million. And according to Zach Osterman, this payment of $52 million comes with, quote, the vast majority of it coming in the form of product. And say what you will about Indiana sticking with Adidas. You want them to step up the apparel game. They do give us these limited collabs with the few artists that they go out and work with. But Nike's just, you know, baseline apparel game is why people wanted to jump ship. Hopefully they can step it up for us because $10 million or 10 years, $52 million, most of it coming in product. I like the sounds of that deal for the Hoosiers. They're going to be able to do a lot with that. You know, the Kelly grads, they're working their asses off. They're working the hardest to get the best ROI on anything for the Indiana Hoosiers. And so what do? You get the factory cost of the product, and you're like, hey, we're just going to sell the shit out of it. You're going to flip that $52 million of product. I imagine with how the sticker price and the team stores and all that, I bet that 52 is like 150 at the least. You think about those candy stripes, what those must cost from the factory just to put, oh, they're raking in cash with this move. I was apprehensive with the Adidas extension. I was, but with the terms, with what, I mean, it's Indiana business. I'm going to trust those brains in Kelly. I trust them to know that we can turn $52 million in product into like a quick nine figures and then some. I love the move. Nothing of serious like weight because it's off season, and if you have news delivered of serious weight at this time in the off season, it's usually bad news. Somebody got in trouble. Somebody's not doing what they're supposed to. No news is good news. So the little news I did want to bring up on our basketball team. Hey, did everyone see Trey Galloway rocking the leg sleeve? I love the leg sleeve look. You know, I know it's for the rehab of the knee surgery, but man, on that video that Cliff Marshall released of the guys ringing that bell, you know, getting those gains in the offseason, Trey rocking the one leg sleeve, it works. That dude looks like he's going to be able to ball next year. One sleeve Trey, it's right up there with headband Trey. Now, if we're talking, hold on, folks, whoa, oh my God, I thought one leg sleeve Trey is like so sick. And then I thought, yo, whoa, wait, headband Trey so sick. And then I thought, you guys, hold on. Keep up with me. What if Trey's rocking both? Holy shit. Holy shit. Holy shit. What if Trey's rocking both? We only see what they want to put out, but I'm glad to see Trey involved in all this. And by all measure of my ocular test with whatever that's worth. Yeah, looks like our guy's going to be ready come tip. If you didn't see it, this is some professional Indiana Hoosier news. I was amazed to see Noah Vonleh's name on the assembly ball roster after the video just last week came out of him in Shanghai, of the Shanghai Sharks having him in the hotel lobby, like his bed. That video was bizarre. Three hotel attendees sitting there waiting for him to wake up, him just being so sick about all of it. Like, that was a bizarre video, I feel, for Noah. That was just crazy. I mean, I don't know all the circumstances surrounding it, but I have to imagine it's China, so can't imagine it make. I don't know. What do I know about China? That being said, it was a very odd situation, and the Shanghai Sharks putting Noah Vonleh up in a hotel lobby is so strange. I don't really even have notes on it. I don't have much details. I just wanted to mention how crazy that video is. And yeah, I was amazed to see his name on that assembly ball roster because it seems like Noah Vonleh's always kept himself at an arm's length from the program. Personally, it just seems, I know, hey, do not think it got lost on me once always. Of course, once always. But that he has kept himself at arm's length, it seems, from the program, and I get that he is from New England, but still, after that Shanghai Sharks incident did him so dirty, you need to see that, what Indian fans just want to give you, man. We just want you to, yeah, despite all that, he was on the roster, and yeah. Just crazy. Speaking of that assembly ball team, let's get into that. After beating both the Valpo alumni team, the Crew, and the Men of Mackey, the number one seed assembly ball fell short of the miraculous comeback to the team of Eberlein Drives, 82-79 on Tuesday night. And it was a real ragtag they had taken the floor in that game, as with injuries to Devontae Green, Race Thompson, and Juwan Morgan, the only real Hoosiers we saw that day were Yogi and Miller. And don't get me wrong, it was fun watching Yogi go off for 21 on a Tuesday. I'll always watch Yogi go off for 21 on a Tuesday. This guy's always up for that. It was just such a shame that they weren't able to complete what was a pretty stellar comeback. Miller absolutely struggled. It's been a tough, I mean, yeah. Miller had some woes in the summer league. He had some woes here. But nonetheless, hey, Miller's, he'll turn it around. He'll land on his feet. And yeah, he's a professional basketball player, man. whatever the case may be for Miller's future in the NBA, overseas, wherever it is, on the Assembly Ball team next year. Like, I'm just so happy to see him still getting after it, chasing that dream. Credit to those guys who came in and filled in the ranks, like, as I mean, like the other guys who weren't Hoosiers, you know. Despite not being true blue Hoosiers, I do want to give each man on that squad, like, props. And they're welcome to the tailgate, man. They're welcome to the tailgate anytime now. They may not have been Hoosiers, but yeah, you suit up for Assembly Ball, welcome to the club. You're in. One of us. Not one of the, like, true blue Hoosiers, but you're one of us. On the debut CBS Bracketology by Jerry Palm, Indiana is a 5 seed in the East. Purdue is a 3 seed. Illinois, 11. Rutgers, 7. Michigan State, 8. Oregon, 10. And UCLA at 4. And, you know, people are saying, okay, this is a realistic finish for what this Indiana team could do. 5th seed. And I am saying, with all due respect to anybody who wants me to wait as this team gels, wait as this team figures it out against just this less than non-conference schedule. Like, no, this team needs to come out like a bat out of hell this season. And this team cannot settle for a 5 seed. I would have been disappointed with the Trace Jackson Davis team settling for a 5 seed. And I didn't even feel half as confident in just the entire construction of the roster as I do now. There are so many less questions on this roster than that roster. And to finish with a 5 seed with the roster currently, like, just stacked as it is, a 5 seed is an absolute disappointment in my mind on the season. And I hope that the staff would genuinely feel the same way. I love this roster. I need this roster to deliver and just blow these projections out of the water. Because a 5 seed is a disappointment. I don't want anybody to look back and think, after all is said and done, if Indiana's a 5 seed, it's like, oh, yay, solid season. Let's go get them now. No, we didn't do our job. If Indiana's a 5 seed with the current non-conference schedule that they have, they just fumbled the conference. And that can't be the case. I wouldn't say fumbled, but they just didn't live up to the sum of the parts, if that's the case. Since our last time of recording, Doster had Ant right on the Field of 68 After Dark podcast to break down Indiana and really hyped up this roster. It was a really fun listen. I love Ant going to Woodson's defense as hard as he does. Even when you can almost hear Doster waiting to pile on, like waiting for Ant to say one negative thing so he can go, oh yeah, just like blah, blah, blah. No. Like, Ant holds it down. Doster waiting to pile on, waiting for an obligatory disparaging comment on Mike Woodson, as just seems to be so necessary for any national talking voices discussing the team. Like, go give it a listen. Ant's stuff is great. And I'm not just saying that because he defends Mike Woodson, but I might go profess him a little more because he does. Ant's expectations for the Hoosiers this season is, I mean, he said it's a Big Ten championship caliber team. It's a second weekend team, no excuses. A top 4 seed, no excuses. Oh, there you go, backing me up. A 5 seed is a disappointment. Top 4 seed, no excuses. Need to be better than TJD's final season as a 4 seed. Yes, again, like I said, that roster. This roster is so much more stable, so much more filled out, so many less questions. Have to seed better than that. And yeah, he just said that the TJD season's result has to be the floor of this season's expectations. And the way he summed that, such a beautiful thesis statement for what needs done. Like, what the bar is for Indiana. That TJD season's result has to be the floor of expectations here. Because if it isn't, then we're not doing ourselves a favor. We're lying to the quality of this roster. We are lying to the talent present in Bloomington. If that is anything but our bottom floor, like the basement expectation. This week on the Three-Man Weave pod, the Three-Man Weave gentlemen, they released their top 100 players for the upcoming season. Hey, props to Indiana. They absolutely gave props to Indiana. Kansas, Houston, Alabama, and Indiana. Only 4 schools with 4 players in the top 100 for next season. While those were the 4 with 4 players, there are only 8 teams with 3 or more. That goes to tell you that while there is parity within this transfer portal, like, there are still those teams who can set themselves apart and go get those players. The difference between Indiana, Kansas, Houston, and Alabama is those other 3 have done a lot more winning than us recently. And it's about time that changes. It's about time that all of this talent that you can talk about individually, that they can talk about on the top 100, it's time that translates into the left column. So, I'm pro Hoosier news for you. Juwan Morgan has been announced as part of the strap in, guys, Buduknost Voli Podgorica team based out of Montenegro, meaning that the feel-good reunion between him and Yogi that during this TBT tournament run. It doesn't have to end after they lift the after I wrote that before they lost for sure. It doesn't have to end after they don't lift the TBT title, I guess. They are also heading to the same squad in Montenegro now. Yes. Yogi and Juan getting to play together. And in other news, you guys all heard about it. The only other, I mean, yeah, TJD played against Team USA. I think I talked about, yeah, him being selected to the Team USA select last episode. Only thing to really mention about pro Hoosiers, like Colel. Colel Ware absolutely stunning the NBA. You know, if there was a redraft, he is a top five in this one. His production in this summer league, we all saw it coming. And I'm glad to see he was able to deliver exactly what we knew he had, like just right out the gate at his introduction to the next level. He was recently announced as a first-team All-Summer League selection. Yes, first-team, so one of the best five. And I just wanted to bring all this up to say, I absolutely loathe the national talking head's take on Colel Ware. Like, no offense, J. Kyle Mann of the One Shining Podcast, noted Kentucky fan with the OSB podcast, just saying that it's just a... saying that this whole thing with Colel Ware is just crazy because we never saw this at Indiana. Yeah, we freaking did, dude. Yeah, we did. Shut up, everybody. Everyone, because it is every single person talking about Colel Ware. Where was this? We haven't seen this all season. Blah, 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 blah. Shut up. There were days this season, this last season, there were games where we were heading into those games as a fan base, like, well, hope Colel can win this one. Like, that was our mentality heading into several games last season. Because he was bringing it every time. He was the only thing we could rely on at times. So, like, I am just blown away by the... I mean, I profess myself as an ignorantly optimistic perspective on Indiana basketball. Y'all, the national media is so ignorant on what Colel was doing last summer. Or last season. Peeves me off to no end, if you can't tell. Colel just keeps making teams kick themselves, and he's just the best center in that summer league by far. I mean, Edie's ankle acting up. Colel's just been balling. Good work, Colel. Just a little bit of recruiting news. The latest news on the Indiana front. Since our last time of recording, the third-ranked center in the class of 2025, Eric Raby, has announced he's down to 11 with Indiana in his first cut of schools. You know, hey, yeah, we're gonna talk about 11. Yeah, hey, we made a top threes cut. Of course, we have to beat out from here. Like, we have to beat out UConn, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, Creighton, Harvard, Ohio State, West Virginia, Oregon, and Stanford. But, hey, we're in the dance, I guess. Yeah, this seven-footer from Germany currently has his fair share of suitors. He's on that U18 German team. Monday, 2 days before this recording, Braylon Mullins announced he was down to 10 schools. Now it's just time to beat out UConn, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, Alabama, Duke, Michigan, Purdue, and Tennessee. You know, not that tough a competition. You really hope we kind of have a head start, but who knows. And I wanted to bring all this up just to say, as I do usually after these recruiting little notes, all of these are cool, but Mackenzie Mbako's final four was Kentucky, Ohio State, Duke, and Memphis. It's fun being on here. It's fun to keep tabs on these recruits. But in today's day and age, let's focus more and more on what we've got. Because nobody on earth besides maybe Duke knows the guys they will be getting for sure until those guys are on campus. And, you know, just ask Purdue even then. With Peach Jams in the books, you should see a lot of movement out of those Nike-affiliated recruits. Just a lot of discussion coming from that. So, of course, there will be more in that to follow. And we'll get to it as we need to. Now it is time for the conference news, the national news, the news in the Big Ten. Not a whole lot for you this week. I wanted to start this section off with talking about the Big East. I am so overhearing any Big East coach just absolutely going on and on and on about how, you know, that damn conference invented the sport of basketball. It's crazy. I was listening to Rothstein's podcast and just going absolutely nuts over the way that those coaches can wax entirely inappropriately poetic about that conference. Those dorks think they invented round ball. With UCLA in the fold now, we dominate title tallies. The Big Ten is the basketball conference, okay? Yeah, it's been a while since we won a title, but that's just because we're so tough and beating each other up is what we need to say. It's just so frustrating hearing him go on and on and just... Big East coaches in general talking about that conference. Just wanted to share my summer gripes. Have you guys got any summer gripes? Go ahead, tweet out to me. Let me know. I will say one thing from that episode of Sean Miller on John Rothstein's podcast. He did provide a Jerome Hunter update saying that he should be cleared for non-contact activity by the end of the summer and contact by fall. With both of those on the current trajectory for his recovery, he should be back by the season opener. Personally, this podcast host wishes the best for Jerome Hunter's recovery, despite all the coaches in his conference being absolutely insufferable. This week it was announced that there will be a single site for all three divisions of the NCAA for the championships taking place in the 2026 season. That means the Division III NCAA championship game, the Division II NCAA championship game, and the Division I NCAA championship game will all be taking place in, yes, Indianapolis, the best place to host any gathering of this size. And the NCAA got really big and really, they patted themselves on their back and they said, hey, look at how cool this is. Look at this memo we sent out in this news drop for you. All three championships, one location. Don't look at the fifth paragraph. And then in the fifth paragraph, if you look, it says, yes, we're all playing in Indianapolis in 2026. And also Bart Torvik decides your future, is what it might as well have said. Because on the fifth paragraph of the NCAA's announcement of the destination, it's so crazy that these were the same announcement, but they were in the same announcement. In the announcement of the Indianapolis location, they had said that Bart Torvik's Torvik rankings, which absolutely tanked us, who says we're the 31st best team next season, are going to be taken into consideration when evaluating who is in the tournament and who is not. And it's like, those seem like they should be two separate announcements, NCAA. I don't want to tell you how to run your company, but it seems like somebody should tell you how to run your company, because, yeah, you're slipping. You can't just sneak that in there. I just said last week, Bart Torvik was a dork for that. Why are you giving the game to the dorks? The numbers. No. Do not. It is so funny that I just got off a rant with that, and then they tried sneaking that in since our last recording. I mean, it truly makes me feel like this is a simulation. Credit to the Big Ten Conference. Big Ten Conference, one of three conferences in the country where every single school in that conference, yes, and ours is rather large now, every single school in that conference will be represented at the Olympics. Credit to each and every one of us for working our asses. No, just awesome to see that the Big Ten's one of those. Andy Katz wanted to go ahead and get out his tiered power rankings of the Big Ten for the upcoming season. And yeah. Let's start with tier four. Yeah, I just want to share the tiers. This is where Andy thinks all the teams in the Big Ten size up. Tier four, he has USC, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Washington, bringing up the basement of the Big Ten. I think that four is the cutoff for the tournament invite. To be one of the teams first left out of the Big Ten tournament when there are cuts, that's gonna be painful. You do not want to be one of those first teams, you know, because everyone's going to pile on. Everyone's going to pile on because nobody's felt it. Nobody's felt it, so they don't know. Yeah, they won't be able to control themselves. They won't. You're getting piled on if you're cut this season. Tier three, Penn State, Northwestern, Michigan, and Iowa. Yes, all the Michigan gassing up. It needs to come to an end, and I'm glad that Andy Katz can see through the fog. Tier two, he had UCLA, Ohio State, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Oregon, and Maryland. These are all the tournament teams. This tier two is the teams he thinks are in the tournament. He thinks the tier three teams are the bubble teams. Tier two in the tournament. Tier one, he says, are Big Ten championship contenders. That being Illinois, Purdue, and Indiana. I like the looks of this tier. Props to Mr. Andy Katz. I just wanted to share that with y'all. And last thing from the Big Ten. One more. Announced just today, after originally committing to Illinois and then decommitting, Jeremiah Fears has committed and reclassified to join the Oklahoma Sooners for this coming season. We saw it, the possibly highest touted recruit that Illinois has ever gotten will now be an Oklahoma Sooner this season. I told you, not a lot of news for you this episode, so let's get right into my Big Five. My Big Five for this week is Burke's Big Five Impressive Big Ten Alums. These are my five top celebs for their impact and contributions from the conference. Like, don't be a dick, guys. Like, I know we have doctors discovering new treatments, like discovering cures to diseases, and real heroes who have made real differences for this conference, like from this conference. But please, I'm just focusing on the nationally known and household names. So, first off, in Burke's Big Five, impressive Big Ten alumni. These aren't my favorite. These aren't most famous. These are impressive. Number one, Neil Armstrong. I gotta give it to him. I gotta give it to a Boilermaker. He stepped on the moon. He was the first to do it. That's freaking awesome. It took a big dork to get there, but man, that's pretty sick that dork did that. Your second impressive Big Ten alumni is Wolverine center and linebacker, and the president of the United States, Gerald Ford. That Michigan grad, Gerald Ford. So impressive. Dude, you're playing center and linebacker, and then you become the president of the United States, and also head of the Ford Motor Company. Incredible. For my next pick, we have the billionaire husband philanthropist and five-time Emmy nominee, Mark Cuban. I mean, who doesn't love Shark Tank? Who doesn't love what it is for me is his The Fallen Patriot Fund. Love Mark Cuban for doing that, man. giving aid and money to families who lost a loved one in Iraq. Love that cause. Number four, Warren Buffett. Yeah, you guys, these guys who make a lot of money, they're impressive as hell. Call me old-fashioned, I still have that mindset. I've never given away $50 billion in my lifetime, and to me, that's very impressive, Warren Buffett. Have you given away $50 billion in philanthropic interests? I most certainly haven't. I can't imagine many of us have. I can't imagine anybody giving me the time of day definitely hasn't. And lastly, my fifth, the final impressive Big Ten alumni, Jesse Owens, Ohio State. Oh, yeah, by the way, Warren Buffett went to Nebraska for undergrad. Jesse Owens, Ohio State. I mean, dominating Hitler's Olympics right in his dumb, fat face. That rules. That freaking rules. And Jesse Owens, that's impressive as hell. All right, that's all I got for you on the on Burke's Big Five for this week. After this word from me, I'll get you on into my conversation with Trey again. I cannot give him enough credit. At Trey Knows Ball on X, go give him a follow. It is well worth your time. Indiana nostalgia, just straight to the veins. It's awesome. Go give him a follow. That discussion coming up right after this word from me. The Often Daunted Podcast is brought to you by me. It's just an effort of love. One fan of this program looking to, you know, do something in the downtime before the next Hoosier tip, which just happens to be quite some time with this offseason. I thank you guys so much for giving me your time. If you haven't, give me a follow everywhere across socials at Often Daunted. Give me that subscribe. Come on, it doesn't hurt you nothing. Come on. Thank you guys so much. Let's get into that conversation with Trey. All right. Thank you for listening to the Often Daunted Podcast. And for this week's segment, I am honored. I am privileged to have on the show an account on X that has just been blowing me away recently, drew me in with the nostalgia, and just kept me with his insight on just Indiana hoops. Really appreciate what he's got to say, and this is my show. I'm going to have whoever the hell I want on it. So I reached out today to Trey, at Trey Knows Ball on X. Go give him a follow. It is a well worth follow. And just wanted to have him on to discuss the latest in this Indiana roster, the crazy turnover we've had, what we can expect, just his insight on everything that's happened this offseason. And I can't thank him enough for coming on. Trey, thank you so much.
Yeah, it's an honor to be on the show, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to start out, as I do with any like new guests I have on, just an introduction, insight into how you found your Indiana Hoosier fandom.
Yeah, man. So pretty much born into it. Probably starts with my dad because he graduated in 77. So you can imagine the IU teams that he saw when he was growing up. Also a big Reds fan, the Reds. I don't know if you follow that, but 75, 76, they won the World Series. So like my dad had like the ultimate childhood pretty much as far as sports go.
Oh, yeah. Perfect time to have it too.
Yeah. And then he passed it down to me. And pretty much since I've been alive, I haven't had the same success that he had, but looking forward to some of that. But yeah, so start with him, and then pretty much I have three sisters. All three of them went to IU. They're all older than me, so they went to IU. So I mean, I've been going to IU games since I could walk and remember. And like a huge basketball fan, I love basketball growing up. But like, you know, most kids are like, I want to play in the NBA. And like I was like, I want to play for IU.
Yeah, like, man.
NBA. It was like all about IU.
They got you early. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. But
as valid as any, as valid as any upbringing into the program. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Then I went to IU from 2013 to 2017 too. So I mean that cemented it.
Oh, but, yeah.
Long before then, I was a huge fan.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Nothing you can say about it, man. You have the family. I mean, and then you just went out and did it yourself. You had to check the box.
Yeah, I mean, I applied to like two schools, and only applied to the other one in case I didn't get into IU.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, I knew I was going to IU.
There you go. Yeah. God. So, hey, yeah, I mean, it's just been your insight, your just comments on any like Indiana news that may come out. It's just been really, I mean, insightful to me, and I've truly enjoyed giving you the follow. I just wanted to know, like, your general thoughts on last season as a whole. Yeah, we're getting right into it. Sorry, Trey.
No, you're good, man.
Your general thoughts as last season, like, as a whole, and just what needed addressed and what you think has been addressed this offseason.
Yeah, man. So going back to last poor season, because I feel like last year was, like, that was the first time we really dipped into the transfer portal, and I think was that the first year they really had it? I can't remember. Was it 2 years ago?
It was probably the third. Like, third? Oh, I don't know. But it just seems like every single offseason, everyone's that much more prepared, and it's a totally different monster than the season before. But
yeah. So, oh, yeah, I guess, yeah. Anyway, it's been around since Woodson basically came. But last year, we really – I feel like we had a lot of momentum in the portal and like when we got Ware and so on. But then it really fizzled out pretty fast. Like we were like in the running for Caleb Love and sort of in there for Dalton Knecht, even though, I mean, there's a lot of rumors about what happened with that one. But,
yeah, we thought Ledlam would save the program. Yeah.
And but really for me, like once we got Ware, I was like, all right, now all we need is a guard and we're set. Like we just need a guard. And we never got that guard that I felt like we really needed. And so I felt like we were kind of doomed from the start, but I still had a lot of confidence because I thought X was going to still materialize into something, you know, something like a stable point guard like he was before his injury. And that never really happened. So I thought really what we really were lacking was more than shooters even. Like, don't get me wrong, we definitely lacked shooting last year as well. But playmaking to me more than anything at the guard position, I think extremely lacked. And Trey Galloway kind of picked it up a little bit, but I mean, that's, in my opinion, that's not his role. Like he's more of a 3-and-D kind of guy, hopefully this year.
Yeah, absolutely. He was doing more than we had like a fair, like reasonable ask of him to do.
But, yeah. And I think that's why, I mean, I'm making a lot of excuses for the team, I feel like, but I feel like that's why his 3-point shooting dipped pretty bad. Because he was outside of his role. I mean, if you look back, you know, 2 years ago, he was shooting like 45% from the 3-point line.
Yeah, it was like first in the Big Ten or something. Yeah,
he was shooting spot-up threes, open spot-up threes. And I think that's what his game is. Like, he's a spot-up 3-point shooter. Don't get me wrong, he attacks the rim probably better than anybody else on the team. Probably still will next year. But, I mean, when he's shooting good, it's because he's shooting spot-up open threes. He's not, you know, carrying the ball like the entire possession like he was the whole time this past year. So I think that'll be a huge help this season with the addition of Miles Rice, Cannon Carlisle, to kind of shoulder the load for the playmaking. I think that's going to be even bigger than adding the shooters. I think adding those playmaking guards is going to be the biggest step forward. So
yeah, I mean, it frees up Trey to kind of bring back the crazy man persona that we all loved and I genuinely kind of miss.
Yeah,
it was the crazy man persona that had like the faith that I had in Xavier and him last season heading into that season was, okay, we can figure it out offensively because our defense is going to be the nastiest guard tandem defensively in the Big Ten. And it just, I don't know where the intensity just fell off altogether heading into last season. But I mean, there was a time heading into last season where you were like Xavier Johnson and Trey Galloway, one of the nastiest defensive backcourts, but it just didn't cultivate at all.
Yeah,
I think
X, I mean, I was a big X truther for most of his career. And I still think that the injuries really, they really tore him down. And then by the time he really got back, Hoosier Nation, as good as they are, they had already kind of given up on him. And I think the mental thing with him kind of, I don't think it helped. Like, I think he probably didn't have much confidence coming back. And plus, you're missing that much time. You really just can't be the same that you were before when you missed that much time. So,
yeah, in Miles and Kanan, or do you think we are getting that? Do you think we're getting guys that we can rely on to bring that intensity, bring the energy, bring the mentality that we need?
Oh yeah, definitely. Especially like Miles Rice for one. I mean, he is like he fits the point god like persona. Like he's a pick and roll maestro. And like him paired with Ballo and Renew. I mean, I think he's going to be, you'll see, in my opinion, I think you'll see Braden Smith type numbers for him this year. As far as maybe I'm thinking like 14 and like 5 or 6 assists a night, probably from him.
From
Rice. Sorry. Yeah. Cause he's just going to be running the pick and roll all game. And I mean, he's so efficient in that pick and roll, not real role.
yeah.
I think he'll be really good for us. And then Cannon Carlisle, he really like, I watch a lot of NBA too. He reminds me of Jamal Crawford.
Okay.
It's a weird comparison, right? But he's got such a deep bag. And when he's hot, like he's going to be real hot. I think the thing we're going to see with him though is hopefully he can stay consistent and efficient. That's going to be, I think, his biggest key to success is being efficient. But when he's on, I think Hoosier Nation's really going to love him.
Yeah, and just being able to turn to Trey Galloway if needed, or like Ja'Kai, whatever we got in him. I mean, I have so much faith in what we have in him. I just from how explosive he was in high school. And yes, that is might be a dumb reason based on the injury that he had. Like, you think he might be able to lose it, but I mean, you can say what you want about the whispers. All the whispers are saying that, hey, Ja'Kai still got the pop. He's out there hooping with the guys, elevating all that. But yeah, it's nice to know that even on those down days, we just aren't so thin. They truly addressed everything. The lessons learned have paid off in this offseason.
Oh yeah, I think Woodson, as stubborn as a lot of people say he is, I think he did take a step back and like kind of listen to what people were harping on. I think
Something
might have been in his ear a little bit about it, but he did go out and finally get some really good dynamic playmaking guards. And I feel like, I think you said on the show before, I feel like every year I go in, I'm like, man, this team's really deep. We got like 8-9 guys that can play.
Yeah,
and then like every year I'm like, man, we actually only have like 6 guys that can really contribute every night. But I think this is another year where it's like, man, I think we have a deep, especially deep backcourt.
On that, there's a huge difference in this season in that what we do have coming is proven production. It isn't like we're waiting on a guy to hit. All these guys have hit, and if they can keep hitting at that rate, we're going to be just fine.
Yep.
I mean, if Miles Rice gets any better than he already is, that's just icing on the cake. Like, it'd be with his age, it's fair to expect he gets better. But with how much he's already like put on the floor, it's not really that fair to expect he's going to get all that better.
Yeah.
It's a blessing of spoils that we got. And I'm just so pumped with what we get to watch this season.
Yeah. I think the biggest gains that all our sophomores are going to see, especially Mbako, Rice, and Carlisle, is going to be an efficiency jump. I think that's the biggest thing. If you look across like college basketball as a whole, the freshman to sophomore jump in efficiency is usually pretty huge. And especially for somebody like Rice, who's already putting up some pretty solid numbers as a freshman, I think the biggest thing you'll see with him is maybe not as big of a spike in numbers. I think you might have a little bit of an assist rise. But I think you'll see, especially with him, Carlisle and Mbako, I think you'll see an efficiency rise in shooting, less turnovers, hopefully less turnovers. Because if you look at Carlisle specifically, he averaged more turnovers than assists last year. But I think it's the roles they filled and the fact that they're, you know, just there's freshmen coming out there. I think you'll see a rise in the efficiency there.
Yeah, I love it. I love to hear it. You know, just based on those guys coming in, the new backcourt, I just wanted to get a few thoughts of yours just like on some possible tandems, who you are excited to see out there playing together, whose games complement each other, what may work for this team.
Yeah, man. I'm a huge proponent for the small ball. I think the best teams you see almost every time they got a stud big man, like someone like Ballo, just a monster in the paint. And then they have like 3 guards and a stretch 4 that can just absolutely spread you out and tear you apart. So I think some of the big success, I know obviously they're going to start Renew and Ballo together.
Yeah.
I mean, really not start them together. But I think after that first 4 minutes or so, I think you're going to see him switch to some small ball attacks. So like some lineups I'm really excited to see is like my favorite. I'll start with my favorite lineup that I'm excited to see. It's going to be Rice, Carlisle, Galloway, Mbako, and Ballo. I think that's one I'm really excited to see because, in my opinion, all 4 of those, the first 4 of them can shoot pretty well, and I think you'll see most of them at least 35% to 40% this year. And then Ballo is pretty much he's a pick and roll big. He can catch lobs, set some pretty monster screens, and then Rice coming off those ball screens with the floor spread. I'm really excited to see that.
I'm just trying to think of the roster, the rotations, and where do you see Luke Goody fitting in there?
I mean, I think he's one of those guys. I think maybe 2 pods ago you talked about on the show. He's a guy that, like, you might see play 8 minutes. You might see him play 20 minutes a night. Like, I think he'll be one of the first guys, I believe, off the bench. Because I think I see him playing a 3 and even a 4 role on the team. Because if you look at the bigs that we got, like you got Ballo, you got Renew, you got Hatton. I'm trying to think. I mean, that's really your only true bigs on the team, right? Am I missing one?
Yeah.
So, they pretty much are going to have to play some small ball. They're going to have to play some Mbako at the 4.
Yeah.
They're gonna have to play some Goody at the 4. Maybe even Tucker a little bit.
I was watching that video from practice and Tucker looks just like a long individual. He looks like he has that wingspan. It's just, I could see him getting some minutes at that 4 spot. if we wanted to get really fast with it.
Yeah, I think that might be more of an emergency situation, because I think what you'll see a lot is I'm thinking and kind of fantasizing about like Renew and Hatton playing together a lot, because Hatton can step out and make that three pointer, giving Renew a little bit of the space in the paint. And then I see Ballo playing with a lot of small ball lineups. That's kind of what I see.
Yeah, yeah. Let Ballo wreck. Let the shooter shoot on the outside. Mm-hmm. And then when Hatton and Renew are playing together, I mean, Renew just can technically dominate the interior while Hatton stretches the floor for him. Yeah. I like that.
So going back to Goody, I think another really good lineup. My second favorite one to see this year is going to be Rice, Carlisle, Mbako, Goody, Ballo. Because I think you can put Goody and Mbako in the corners. And I think I'm pretty confident both of those guys will be shooting 40%+ from the three-point line this year. Probably our best shooters for sure. And then you have Carlisle and Rice that can just – they can handle it. They can dish it. They can create their own shots. Ballo setting pick and rolls at the top of the key. Like, I just see a lot more spread floor than we've seen in, like, 10 years. It's really exciting for someone like me that was really big on the Korean era and spreading the floor, jacking up threes. Like, it's pretty fresh and exciting, the roster that we got in the rotation.
Yeah, yeah. People could, you know, go against that saying, we've been asking for that for how many years? But, like, we haven't had the roster to, like, defend the fact that it looks like the minds that be, the people in charge, the people that need to make the decisions to, you know, I mean, make that happen, have done just that. Like this roster is evidence of they're starting to figure out what needs to happen.
Yeah. And I think it kind of goes against, I think what Woody's kind of foundation is on. He's more of like he obviously likes defense. He likes long athletes that he can switch everything. So I do feel like it does kind of go away from like his bread and butter, if you will, where we could potentially play some pretty small lineups out there. I think you still have the potential to switch most screens, but I think we're going to be undersized more than he's used to, which is going to be weird. But I think, in my opinion, that it's way better to be able to do that and be smaller and quicker and more talented.
Yeah.
The trade-offs, I think, they benefit IU. So it'll be exciting to see.
A name you included a lot in your rotations that you were excited to see, Kanan Carlisle. Just wanted to see how, like, with Trey coming back from injury, how does he fit in? Because, like, those two names go hand in hand this year with, minute distribution. What does Trey's initial minutes look like coming back from this injury?
Well, it depends on the injury. I haven't really been keeping good tabs on it because we're still so far away from the season. I'm not really, worrying about it too much. But, I think it really depends on how he progresses throughout the summer because – in my opinion, like Woody, he's pretty loyal to his upperclassmen. And I think, Trey is probably going to be a team captain, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
At the beginning of the year. I mean, I don't see why he wouldn't be. I think the best IU team, and I'm not going to be mad if this doesn't happen, but I think the best IU team starts Trey over Carlisle. It's a pretty unpopular opinion, but this is why I feel that way. I think, like I said, I compared Carlisle to like a Jamal Crawford. Because he has that bag and he has that explosiveness off the bench to really propel an offense, which, looking back again over the last 10 years or so, like, we haven't had a good bench. We haven't been able to get much production off the bench over the last, however many years. And I think he should be that single-handed, like, offensive explosion off the bench, whereas Trey can fit in that starting lineup that already has a lot of good offensive pieces in it. And he can play that 3-and-D kind of role and be crazy man. And then you can have Carlisle come in at like the 4-minute mark or the 16-minute mark, if you will, and then provide some more against the second team or the other team, provide an offensive spark and really keep us from missing a step when some of those guys come out. But like I said, I'm not going to be mad either way if either one of them starts because they're both really good.
Those are the type of problems you want to have.
Yeah.
Deciding between those guys who's getting the minutes. Hey, this week, and I saw it on your list of like big questions on the season. Just your thoughts on the non-conference schedule that we saw just released last week. I wanted to know that I put out a poll, and it's crazy how it came back. It came back out like damn near just 50-50. Like people hate it or love it, and it's like, of course, like you couldn't program this fan base to be more divisive. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on going the cupcake route.
Yeah, I'm going to say this, and I'm as bad of an offender as anyone. if you're a fan of IU and you like this non-conference schedule, I mean, you're lying to yourself. you don't like this non-conference schedule. Like, I get it with the net, and like, it's great.
Yeah.
If you can blow out those bad teams, you can still get a good boost from it. But I mean, what's even better than beating the crap out of bad teams is beating very good teams. So I mean, like, you still aren't going to get the same boost that you get from knocking off a, you know, a top 10 squad. And then as a fan, like, I feel like I'm going to be snoozing through the whole first half of the season, with the exception of like the battle for Atlantis and stuff.
I hope so.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
No, I would have been able to say the same thing last year, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I hope so. But yeah. I do think the battle for Atlantis will give us – it's going to give us enough of a test to see where we're really at, you know? Like, we're not going to be questioning what we're capable of going into the conference season. And also, as a guy that knows, like, they're bringing in a lot of new pieces, I get it for that fact, too. And, like, you want to be able to give them time to gel before you really start testing their confidence against some really big schools. But, man, overall, I really do hate it. I've been defending it online pretty hard, but, like, at the end of the day, I mean, I hate it as a fan.
Yeah.
I want a tougher schedule. I want to be able to go to some big games in the non-conference. So, yeah. that's where my stance is on it.
I mean, South Carolina might be an expensive ticket.
Yeah, I mean, and they're a good team. I mean, they're a really good team. So is Sam Houston. I mean, that's going to be one that you can't sleep on. I mean, there's a lot of schools in, like, the 150 range and the Torvik projections that we're playing. So, I mean, they're not terrible. The first couple teams we're playing are probably going to be pretty terrible, but that's pretty normal. But, they're not terrible schools, but they're not, you know, eye catching either. So it is what it is. I mean, you can't change it, so you just gotta embrace it.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, overall, like, with the roster as stacked as it is, what do you think this year? What does success look like for Mike Woodson and the Indiana Hoosiers?
Yeah, I'm not a big, like, participation trophy guy. So for me, like, if we're talking complete success, I mean, that, to me, that's a national championship. Like, nothing's a complete success for me without a national championship, and I think that's why Hoosier Nation is the way that it is, and, like, why we have that history is because, like, we don't settle for lesser. But to answer your question, kind of the way you probably would like me to answer the question, what I expect.
I love that original answer, man. I listen to podcasts and they're like, oh yeah, that's a Sweet 16 season for him. That's a year to be proud of, and I'm just like, what?
That's a heartbreak season.
I mean, I would, of course, kill to get back to the Sweet 16, but I would be devastated after it. Like, I don't get it.
I think my expectation, though, I think they definitely should be right there for the Big Ten championship. Like, there's no reason why they shouldn't be a top 1-3 team in the Big Ten. They're definitely talented enough to win it. It's just whether the pieces gel or not. And then I think at minimum, I mean, we should be getting out of the first weekend of the tournament. Like, we ought to be a top 4 or 5 seed, and we should be able to get out of the first weekend. And then from there, like, I'm not saying they're playing with house money, because they're talented enough to beat anybody. But my expectation is at least competing pretty heavily for a Big Ten championship.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, if you look, like, throughout college basketball too, in history, like, look at the Tom Crean era, the fourth year of a head coach, that's typically when you see what they're capable of too. Like, Tom Crean's fourth year, I believe that was the preseason number one team. And then about 4 years after that, it's like a 4 year cycle. If they're like, at least every above average coach can get something together every 4 or so years. The great coaches obviously keep it going in between there.
Yeah.
But this is Woodson's prove it year to me. Like, he's got the team, the best team he's had since he's been there. Like, he should be able to show him what he's capable of as a coach this year. So,
absolutely, there's no reason. I'm right with you in that regard. He has every weapon that we can possibly put in this arsenal, mm-hmm. and it's time to do or die. Like, he's just got to do the damn thing with this squad.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be interesting to see how it shakes out. Of course, we're optimistic. So
yeah, I'm like 2 weeks from the end of the season. If we're like 3 games above 500, I'm like, we can still win out.
heck yeah. You would think, man, with how the Hoosiers charged last year, I didn't tell anybody I thought there was a chance, but
I was telling people, I was like, there's a chance. I mean, we just need one more win in the Big Ten tournament, we got a chance.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I'm a pretty, it's probably bad for my heart. I'm pretty optimistic. Even we can be down 20 points in a game. Like, just a little run gets us right back in this thing, man.
Now
I hang till I'm dead, man. I
know plenty of your thoughts just from what you share on Indiana basketball. I wanted your thoughts on our competition this season. I didn't include this on our little outline I sent you. I'm throwing you a curveball here. I just wanted to know your thoughts on, the national media can't be right about Purdue, right? Like, they can't stay there.
I've pissed a lot of people off online about Purdue throughout the last few weeks. And I think early on in my account, I've only had it since like December, but I was talking about Purdue and what I thought of them this year. And I think they have a high ceiling. Like, they've got the biggest thing they got going for them. They have a winning culture now. Like, I mean, you can't deny that they've got a winning culture, and that does a lot for a school, just having that culture. And they have guards that are now pretty experienced. However, like, I'm going to catch a lot of shit for this probably. But I'm still not a total believer in Braden Smith, man. I'm just not a total believer in him. And this is my reasoning. I think he's all right. I don't think he's what his numbers showed last year. This is why as well, like, Edie, when he sets the best ball screens in the world. I mean, I'm not sure there's an NBA player that sets better ball screens than Zach Edie does. You would watch him come off those ball screens, man, and there would be like 6 feet of space around him on all sides of the court, just wide open. And that's why I think he's also a good pick and roll point guard. I'll give him credit for that. But he had so much space to do with what he wanted. And it just makes the game so much easier for you when you have someone like Zach Edie setting screens for you.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say he's trash by any means. I'm just saying I'm not a full-on believer that he's an All-American point guard yet. And I think Lawyer has showed what he's capable of on the negative end. Like, the national championship, when he gets bodied by athletic guards, he struggles pretty mightily.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not fully sold on their backcourt. I think they have the pieces, though. And I think they're plenty capable of winning the Big Ten as well. I'm not going to pretend they're trash, but I do think – for one, they're going to struggle finding an identity post-Edie, because it's just like when we lost Trace. Like, I mean, it's hard to replace that. Once you have something and then lose it, it is hard to replace that.
Yeah, it's crazy difficult to replace that. Yeah, we're almost back there.
So, I mean, like, that's what a lot of people give Woodson crap too. Like, you lose that much scoring, it's hard to replace that a year after. You can look back at even Bob Knight's teams post the 76 season. On pretty much every championship season he had, the year after, it was not always great, you know. So it's hard to replace things that brought you success. So I think they'll struggle with that. They're plenty capable, but I do feel talent-wise specifically, I mean, we are above them talent-wise. That's, in my opinion, no question. They do have that winning culture, though, that'll keep them near the top in competing. So that's my thoughts on them.
I got to throw out Illinois, maybe the – pseudo basketball rival something, or I mean, it is crazy that the Big Ten like only gave us one matchup with them. I almost thought that was disrespectful to Illinois fans who thought them like our rivals. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, they're another one I like to get going on Twitter because they're so easy to rattle. Yeah. But I think they're also talent wise I think they're, I mean, they're on par with us talent-wise, I think. I mean, they have plenty of pro talent on the team. They're also new.
That's what I'm afraid. I'm afraid that Brad does it again where there's just three guys who I didn't know anything about their names. They all got on campus last week, and they're just balling for Illinois.
The thing that scares me about them is they've got shooters. I mean, if you watch videos of their practices, like, there's a ton of guys that just have pretty looking jump shots on the team. And that scares me because a good shooting team can beat anybody on any given night. Yeah, I mean, it's just the way it is. They can also lose to people just because they rely on outside shots, but they're definitely, they have plenty of talent. I think the youth/newness. I mean, they've got a lot of older guys too, but they're new. I think it's one of those things too, where they got to replace a lot of guys and they got to find their identity, which could help or could cause them to struggle. But I think they're in my top four teams that I think there's about four to five teams that I think can really compete for the Big Ten title. And they're definitely one of them too.
All right, so we got three up there, three of those teams. Who are those last two? I'm not going to have you go in. I just want to know.
No, you're good. I think a lot of people are iffy about them. Rutgers is one of them for me, too. I think they've got if those freshmen are what people think they are.
Yeah, if it hits right, if it hits right and the cards all fall their way like that, yeah, they can absolutely be everything that they're hoping.
And then the other one, UCLA. A lot of people aren't very high on them either. I mean, a lot of the media is, but a lot of local folks aren't as high on them, I think, just because they're a newcomer and they don't want to acknowledge the fact that they're probably pretty good. But I think they're the other one for me that I'm looking at to be towards the top.
See, for UCLA, I like to think that, like, them playing Big Ten basketball in the Pac-12 was, like, their edge for being such a just beast in the Pac-12. So I'm thinking now that Mick Cronin's in the conference he was always supposed to be coaching in, like, it'll probably just wash out and they won't be that dominant so much. But it's just a thought I'm having.
I'm trying to spitball
that.
I like that thought.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that'll also help them adjust better to the Big Ten. Yeah. If they already play that style, but I like that thought better.
The kryptonite. Now that we're all playing it, man. He ain't gonna be out ahead like that every year.
Yeah, I don't know if there's those are the five that I really think could win it. Yeah. I mean, someone may surprise them and be up there in the top five, but I'm not sure if anybody else has the talent to really compete for the actual championship. I mean, it's 18 teams. I mean, something could happen, but.
Last thought on the conference. Like, there at Northwestern, there was a time before Boo Booey, there was Northwestern basketball after Boo Booey. Are we going to be back to Northwestern basketball after Boo Booey? Or?
Well, the thing about Northwestern basketball that has always just shot chills down my spine is it doesn't matter what era in Northwestern basketball it is, they always seem to, like, either beat us or give us the game of our lives whenever we play them. So, I mean, I don't think they're going to be their ceiling, I think, is middle of the pack. But, yeah. I mean, I still hate playing them every single time.
Yeah, of course.
Always give us a run. Always. But, yeah, I don't think they're competing at the highest level this year. I think they're, more than anyone, losing a guard like Boo Boo is, that's tough. So.
Hey, scrolling your X timeline, just checking it out, and I just saw your condensed concerns for the team on the season. I wanted to rattle through them and just get some of your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
So you have six listed here. That first one, can we defend? The big question of this roster. Like, you're the biggest, like, most glaring deficiency right there for you. And how does this team address that possibly?
Yeah, I would say it's partly a deficiency and partly just an unknown for me. The deficiency to me lies in Mbako and Renu. I mean, in my opinion, I try not to be too negative, but, like, their foot speed on the perimeter is just – it was ungodly bad last year.
Yeah.
I mean, both of them struggled pretty mightily on the perimeter. And Renu, obviously, like, he's more of a big, so you kind of expect that a little more. But he's also not a big that's like a rim protector. So he's in a weird no man's land for me where it's, like, it's hard for me to see where he fits defensively. But he's going to have to find a way to either defend on the perimeter or protect the rim a little bit this year. Like, he's got to do one or the other.
He closes out like a linebacker, and it's just like we just have to kind of get a little lighter on our feet on that closeout, and we'll be just fine. Limit those fouls and really turn things around in that regard. But yeah, I mean, that you kind of discussed it for your second point was just how does Renu fit?
Yeah,
and it is a lot of people are saying this could be another clogged front court. I don't think that's the case because I think our front court was clogged because there was just no other avenue.
Yeah.
Like, there was literally no other plan of attack than the clogged front court. But yeah, how do you think Malik fits with this? You kind of talked about the bigger rotation, the smaller one, but.
Yeah. I think, one, it depends on what kind of game he brings to the table this year. Can you stretch the floor a little bit? Can you defend at a high level? Those two things, if you can do both of those, it doesn't matter what lineups we put out there, he'll fit. But two, I think playing the small ball lineups, if he can play the five in a small ball lineup, he fits perfect. If we play him with Hatton and Hatton's able to stretch the floor and stand, you know, at the top of the key or like in the corner and stretch the floor for him, he fits really well with that too because Hatton can protect the rim. But at the end of the day, I think the guard play that we have around him now and the shooting that we've added is going to help him fit a lot more than what it looked like he fit last year. But good guard play solves pretty much everything. I mean, you have good guards. It doesn't really matter as much what you put around them because they can make things work for you.
A ton of wounds. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something we haven't had in a while. So
speaking of who could potentially be one of those guards healing those wounds, can our sophomore class make the efficiency jump? Least of which, let's talk about Gabe Cupps.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I go on these Big Ten shows from time to time and I go, hey, no team has four starters coming back.
Yeah.
I make sure not to really name them off. Like, I'm just like, we have four starters coming back. Not to say we made one of them, like possibly the 10th, 11th, or 12th guy. But
yeah. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah. And it's just a credit for Gabe. He had to see the writing on the wall heading into this season that something had to be addressed.
Yeah. And Gabe, the beginning of the season, especially last year, I watched a few games. I went to a lot of games last year. I live like 20 minutes from Assembly Hall, so I go to a lot of games.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome. Pretty much the coolest thing ever. But early on, when we're playing some smaller schools, you can see like he's got that winner mentality. He's kind of got like the Mamba mentality in him. You can see it. He makes winner plays. He plays really hard defensively. But I just think his body was not there yet. Like he was not ready for the role that we thrusted him into. And it's not a knock on him. I just think he's a guy that Woodson recruited, maybe even thinking that Shelfino would be back originally. I don't think he expected him to play the minutes that he did last year. And I don't know if Gabe even expected that. But I think for him, he's going to make an efficiency jump more than maybe anybody because he's not going to be expected to make many plays. Like he's going to come out there maybe like – I'm expecting like max 8 to 10 minutes a game. I think Rice played like over 30 minutes a game at Washington State last year. So he's capable of playing extended minutes and that kind of point guard talent you do want on the floor a lot. So I don't see Cupps getting a lot of minutes. I think him and Ja'Kai are going to be fighting for minutes a lot too. But I think the time he's out there, I think there's going to be a big weight lifted off his shoulders. And I think he's going to feel more free to, you know, do his thing now that there's, because when he's playing, he's going to be playing with probably Gallo and Carlisle on the floor with him that can make plays while he's on the floor. So I just don't think the playmaking load is going to be there and he's not going to be expected to do a whole lot. I think that'll help him a lot.
Yeah. I mean, the circumstances that were forced upon him last season were definitely just not fair for his development. I mean, I think it was maybe fair to expect a little more, but I mean, it just what he was asked to do so much more than he signed up for when he committed here. So I just appreciate the effort. I like to see the gains we apparently are getting from him this offseason.
It looks like
he's getting some bulk, and that'll definitely help in this bruiser of a conference.
Mm-hmm.
We discussed Trey already. I won't go into that. We talked about the rest of them. Just will we get Junior Trey back? Really hoping that we get that wild man persona back. Will we play some small ball? Here's hoping the Hoosiers are looking to get out and run. Open threes.
I mean, the personnel they got, they're going to have to. They don't have the bigs to play big all the time. So I think, I mean, it's going to be whether they want to or not, they're going to have to with the personnel they got. And I think they wouldn't go into the season with those personnel if they weren't expecting to already. So,
yeah. And then the final concern was just, will they be able to take advantage of that tough non-conference slate?
I thought it was going to be at the time. Man. I saw South Carolina was on there. So I seen East Central battle for Atlanta. So I was like, man, we might get a couple more big schools in there. Be good. And then, it's not that tough anymore. So I think we'll be all right there. I think that shifts more towards can we take advantage of the only tough really stretch we have? Like, can we win the battle for Atlantis and really show what capable of in the non-con? So,
if we show up and win Atlantis, like, they can't say anything about our non-con.
We're good.
The answer is
exactly.
Last thing I wanted to bring up, having you on, it's just been awesome going through your timeline. I wanted to say your nostalgic posts really are just it's awesome. It is a joy in my day just having those stumble upon my page. You really go in depth, man. You are a well of just Indiana hype videos, Indiana feel good videos, and I truly appreciate it for that for the amount of wealth. Yeah.
Being someone that, you know, I've grown up not seeing more than a Sweet 16, really. I mean, I remember vaguely watching the run that we made in 2002, but I was like, I think 8 years old.
So,
I remember my dad watched it. We were driving to Florida, like every person from Indiana does on spring break. And my dad had like a TV with like a little 4-inch screen on it with bunny ears, and he would drive until IU played, and then he'd sit in the back of our van and watch IU on like the 4-inch TV. So like, and growing up with someone like him, he's always been talking about, you know, the 70s teams, the 80s teams. Like, he's always imparted the history of IU basketball on me. And I think as much as people like to hate on our pride and our history, I think that's what makes us what we are. And that's why if we forgot about that, like, we are no different than anybody else if we forget about the history that we have. So I think it's, that's what keeps the aura of IU alive, is us knowing our history and being
the knowledge in the roots. Yeah.
Yes.
The knowledge in the roots.
I mean, the recruits, I mean, the kids of Indiana, they still know. Anybody that knows ball, they still know who the blue blood in Indiana is, who Big Brother is, they still know. So it's, you just got to remind folks every once in a while, even our own fans. So
I love it, man. And you just, you can point back, you have like a example of pretty much for any scenario of Indiana basketball. And I truly appreciate it.
Appreciate that, man.
With just all the knowledge you have and just the depth of Indiana history, I just wanted to get out of here with your five personal Hoosiers. This isn't, I'm not talking who's the greatest. I'm talking Trey Knows Ball, at Trey Knows Ball. Everyone go hit him up on X. He's just blowing up. He's the man on the rise right now. Go check it out. Trey, I want your top five Hoosiers. These were the ones you love to follow. So it could be Tom Pritchard just for that single dunk he had against Minnesota. And just how well he can wear a t-shirt. So
all respect to all respect
whatever
to
you think.
So I got to start with Yogi at the point. I mean, I actually played against him in high school one time. Almost beat him. I told him that. He called him on my post the other day. And I was like, hey, man, just wanted you to know. He almost had you beat. But as the fanboy I am. But he's my number one favorite Hoosier of all time. And because I grew up the same time as him. Yeah. He came back, revitalized the program along with a lot of dudes, and he really became probably the second best point guard that IU's ever had, in my opinion, behind Isaiah. There's a lot of great point guards. Damon Bailey also gets an argument, but Yogi, in my era, I'm biased. He's my point guard.
We're the same age. He's for sure my point guard. For sure.
Respect to everybody that came before him. Quinn Buckner, you know, Isaiah Thomas, Damon Bailey, great dudes. Quinn Buckner's probably my second favorite point guard, actually. But anyway, moving on. My two guard, I'm not going to say shooting guard because I'm playing a three guard lineup here. Victor Oladipo. I mean,
naturally.
Once again, like, R.A. man. I mean, you can't. And the swagger he had, and just the absolute competitor, man. I was, I think it was his sophomore year. It was his sophomore junior year. He hit like a three quarter court buzzer beater. I was at the game. I was like, dude, this guy is special. he just has this aura about him. Like, he's going to be something. And
it was enough, crazy like, how special it just popped up. Like, he just like one over the course of one summer came back and like immediately it was just what happened.
Yeah. Like, I think his drive meshing with Tim Buckley and Tom Crean's development program, whatever they did, that still to me is the most ridiculous thing, the way they were churning out like out of nowhere prospects, but
number two picks, like crazy.
So I just think he embodies Indiana basketball, just an absolute competitor, just and a winner, and the defense, the blocks, like, and then obviously the dunks. Like, there's no more exciting player I think I've ever watched.
No,
he's my two guard. Moving down, my third guard, my three guard lineup. I talk about him a lot on my page too, Eric Gordon. He was coming around really right when I really, really fell in love with Indiana basketball. I kind of really started following just before Kelvin Sampson, like the last couple years of Mike Davis's run.
You bought that stock high.
Yeah.
Little did you know.
So I remember I went to a Kelvin Sampson basketball camp when I was in like sixth or seventh grade. I can't remember what year it was, but it was the year before Eric Gordon. They just got him committed, and I was at his basketball camp. Yeah. And Kelvin Sampson did a lot to the program, but dude, his basketball camp was pretty badass. Like, he was a cool guy. I will give him respect in that regard, but I'm not going to talk about him anymore because you know, what he did. But
I mean, he has to be awesome. Look at the program he's able to run in the manner he's able to run it. It's it's impressive.
But Eric Gordon showed up to that camp, and like instantly, like every kid in the gym like stops what they're doing, the drill they're running, they run over to him, get an autograph, and he just signed all these autographs to these kids. And I'm like, dude, this guy is so cool. And then like I think it was that year. I think it was after that. That's when he dropped like 43 points on Jordan's kids, and like I was like, man, this kid. He was, in my opinion, he was the best player in that class. And that class was one of the best high school classes probably in the 21st century, with Michael Beasley, Kevin Love, OJ Mayo. I don't know if you remember that name or not. OJ Mayo.
It's just so crazy to see him sign another NBA contract. Yeah. It's crazy.
I think he's the most talented. I piss a lot of Hoosier fans off when I say this too, but I mean, he is the most talented player I've ever watched at IU ever. I mean, if you watch the early season before he hurt his wrist and before the Kelvin Sampson drama, he was lights out, dude. I mean, he could knock down 30 footers. He could dunk on anybody. He played insane defense. He was so strong. Like, he was just so good, man. I think if he, I mean, it shows that he went pro, man. Like, he's a beast. But, like, if he could have stayed longer, he would have been arguably the best Hoosier of all time.
NIL. If we had NIL to throw at him.
Oh, I'd be giving him the bag, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my third. And then moving down, DJ White, like I said, that time frame is when he was a freshman, probably one of the first years I watched IU consistently. I mean, he's a class act. Like, I mean, he was such a good dude, and he was such a beast in the paint, man. Like, and that was right when I was a big hip hop guy when I was younger. That was right when like Lil Wayne came out with the Go DJ song.
Oh,
and I used
my God,
to bang
dude.
That. I used
Great
to bang
time.
That song. My sister actually went to IU when he was there, and she got invited to his birthday party, and like she showed me they handed out flyers, and it was like.
Hell yeah.
Something like Go DJ on it. So it was badass. But he's my four. And then at the five, a little bit of recency bias probably too, but I'm going to put Trace there because, I mean, statistically, he had probably arguably the best statistical career that anybody's ever had at IU. I mean, you can compare him with a lot of the greats, and he stacks up pretty well against all of them. I mean, what he did in a four-year span individually, is there's not many guys that have done it. And he really – it's unfortunate that he came up the same time as Zach Edey, because he definitely played a National Player of the Year.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that. It's unfortunate that he didn't have more guard support. Like, that they could have put a team to, like, warrant having him on it right now. Like, as much as there are the most sour fans who point to Trace and just say he wasn't one of the guys that did it, he didn't have any of the roster support that the guys that actually did it had.
Like, and he went through a coaching change. I mean, like, you can't expect much out of a guy that literally coaches are getting fired while he's there. Like, it's not his fault. I mean, any guard support. I mean, you saw when he got decent guard play out of Schilfino when Xavier was having a decent year. Like, you saw what he was pretty – the team was good when they had that. And I think if he had the guards we have this year, I mean, we would have been insane too. But, he's an all-time favorite of mine too, because he's another one of those guys that when IU was struggling, he still stayed – he still stayed true and came and gave us his all for 4 years. So a lot of respect for him.
That's I love that five, man. I respect the hell out of that five.
If you're in my generation, like around 30 years old, and that's not your five, like, I don't know what you're doing. I mean, I did put some honorable mentions. I'm not going to talk a lot about them, but Cody Zeller, James Blackman Jr., for me, my first love was Bracey Wright. As much as people hate him, like, I was a little kid and I just loved watching him.
You could see how in our age group, one that could find his way into a lot of those is Jordy, just because he kind of he held down the fort for a while.
Kid too. He's another guy that came into a struggling program and built it back up. So,
but yeah, that's just, we're giving that fresher take, that, you know, over 30 take.
I love Jordy. And then I think one that he could be on some people's lists, and this is me being bold, but I think Miles Rice is going to be someone that Hoosier fans love.
Yeah,
he seems like a really good dude, good backstory, and I think he's going to be an incredible point guard too. So
I was just talking about this the other day. I was like, it's one thing to have a transfer, but it's so awesome to have a transfer that like still has enough time to become a legend for your school. Like, there aren't many transfers who like can go somewhere and then it's like, oh yeah, that merc came in and we won a title. Like that, yeah. That was a great, but he was like the mercenary we brought in that year. Like, yeah. Yeah. Like Cam Spencer. Yeah. You're a UConn guy through and through, but you weren't there the whole time. But.
Yeah. You, yeah. I think so too. Like he will, like Miller Kopp, for instance, like I think he considers himself more of a Hoosier than a Northwestern guy at the end of the day. But I mean, and he ended up getting to play 2 years at IU, but like at the end of the day, he played most of his career at Northwestern, and like,
yeah,
he's more of a Northwestern guy at the end of the day. But like, yeah, like Carlisle and Rice both have the opportunity to really call themselves like true Hoosiers, you know,
and like make real numbers and real production and real legacies here. They still have the time to do so.
Yeah,
like K9 Carlisle, I don't know how much time, because it sounds like a lot of NBA guys are interested in his potential, because potential in the NBA. And so, I mean, it'll be interesting. Miles Rice, I'm so excited to see that we can potentially get a real legacy out of him.
Yeah, I think he's a four-year guy. I mean, he doesn't have the athleticism that really pops off to NBA scouts, I don't think. He's quick, but he's not like dunking on people consistently, you know. Like
he's like one of those bodies that NBA scouts, if the NBA is going to take that flyer, it's because they're excited for what he can bring to a team immediately.
Yeah,
like exactly. It's a champion running it back, and he can alleviate them. Yeah,
yeah, and he's a really long, he is a long player too. Like if you look, he's got some really long arms. He's a long guard, but I do think that he is a 4 year guy. So I'm excited to have him for hopefully the long term, and then. Carlisle, like, I hope he does get to go pro this year, because that means he's had a great year. I would love to have him for, you know, the next three, and I'd love to have Mbako for the next three. I'd love to have Jakai for four. You know, like, there's a lot of things you'd love to have. But at the end of the day, if they're going pro, that means things are probably going right. So I won't be mad at him if they do. I've never am mad at a player for making the jump and, you know, trying to support himself and his family. So,
and at the end of the day, it's so nice to know we aren't in a position like Minnesota where the slightest sign of like something going right for this program, that guy is liable to just leave. Like it's so nice having the insurance and security that we have in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have the nil bag too. So, I mean, if you guys are thinking about staying, it's not, we haven't really lost anyone big to the portal yet. And that's a very good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Rothstein, I think, says it a lot. Like, the best gets are the ones you keep or whatever. Or the ones
That was absolutely the case for our squad this year. With how quick McKenzie recommitted, with how quick Malik came back. Like, it blew me away with how quick those guys, the question was just put to bed. And I was like, yeah, that was the biggest – and that was the biggest summer win we had was those two guys.
And I do want to mention, too, that I think, like, the nil bag definitely – is huge, but it also seems, and this is something that I don't give Woodson enough credit probably, but like you saw when things went bad with Archie, like the players, you could tell they were visibly frustrated with him, but it seems like the players really get behind Woodson and they believe in what he's trying to do. And,
they'll put themselves between the fans and Woodson.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they truly believe in him.
And that's not, I mean, that's hard. I mean, if you think about what these players see on social media every day, it's easy to make someone a scapegoat, you know? And they still have pretty much every opportunity that I've noticed, like they have defended him. So I think that's huge for Woody. And I think that's something that people don't think about a lot, is like the players, even in the tough times, have really supported him. So that's a big thing to me. Like if a player still supports a coach through the tough times, that's big, but I'd rather not have the tough times. So.
Yeah. And the big thing is like these guys have agents, parents, interested parties who want to have them be seen in the best light. They aren't going to be sticking around with Woodson unless they think he can put them in the best light. Whatever the NIL bag may be, if those guys have a shred of belief in their future in basketball, they're here because they think this is the best place for their game.
And that should
ease a lot of fans.
IU definitely has a good mix of, especially on this team, guys that I think can be here for 4 years, but also guys that are talented enough to make the jump. And that's like you see with UConn. I mean, they had a ton of draft picks this year, but good teams always have a pro guard, like a pro level guard, and they have a lot of great pieces around it. Good, usually a stud big man, which we have two really. I don't give Renew enough credit, but we really have two stud big men, and I think Ballo specifically being just a rock rim protector in the middle is going to be huge for this team. I think this team, they've got the talent and they've got the role players. They've got the playmaking. They got they got everything they need, and it's just time for Woody to it's time for him to show the fans what he's got and
absolutely,
and put a good product on the floor. So
hey, that is one way to take it out. I just hey, we made it to the end, man. I wanted to say it's nice that you didn't have to go out and save some lives. You were able to make it all the way to the end of the interview. In case you guys are wondering, Trey was worried that he might have to dip and just go save some lives, be a hero for a little bit. So.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm actually on the busiest engine at my fire station today, so I was pretty nervous about that. But
Well,
I'll probably get one here in like 5 minutes when I'm trying to go to sleep.
I appreciate the good citizens for giving you a break. And
don't do
everybody, you have to go follow at Trey Knows Ball. Trey absolutely knows ball. There's no question, man. You got to give the account a follow. It is a joy for a Hoosier fan. Trey, thank you so much.
I appreciate it, man. And I just want to give you a shout out too, man. I mean, I know it's your pod, but like I started listening after you reached out to me. I'm not a big podcast guy, but I'm a weekly listener now, man. Like
you have to come on as the season draws closer. Like it's so nice to have you on just to sit down, chit chat about nothing. But once we have some real substance to bite into, I'd love to have you on again.
Hell yeah, man. I'd be honored.
Awesome. Thanks, Trey.
All right, buddy. Peace.
Again, I cannot thank Trey enough. It was so much fun having him on for the first time, and I look forward to having him on a few more times. Maybe before the season tips, but for sure, once that season tips, I'm going to have Trey on to see, you know, what his ball-knowing eyes are telling me. With that down, let's get on to the Hoosier History Hit, and then we'll get you on out of here.
This is your Hoosier History Hit.
For your Hoosier History Hit, I just wanted to bring up a topic that I'm truly going to add into a future goal in my life. I can't make it to the MLB still. That was my first dream. I wanted to play first base. I definitely can't make it to the NBA. I quit in eighth grade. That's going to be so hard for me now at 32. But what I can still strive for in this life is to become a Sagamore of the Wabash. And you're saying, whoa, what is that title? Sounds dope. I want it. And yeah, it makes sense. It sounds awesome. I don't blame you for wanting it. And what is the Saginaw of the Wabash? It's basically a title that goes to, it's basically the Presidential Medal of Freedom, but for the governor of Indiana, you know, a little lesser, but it's a goal I think I can get. I ain't going to get that presidential one. I might be able to get that gubernatorial, is that what it is? Gubernatorial award? And the Sagamore of the Wabash, the award was brought into tradition and into concept when in the 1940s, Governor Ralph F. Gates was given a Kentucky colonelship award by the governor of Kentucky at the time. It's the colonelship. It's why it's Colonel Sanders. It's an honorary title to just fair citizens in that state. He was so inspired by receiving that gesture from the governor of Kentucky that our own governor instilled one himself, making it the Sagamore of the Wabash. The name Sagamore, that was used by the Algonquin-speaking Native American tribes to describe a lower chief or a smaller leader among the tribe. And it wasn't that he was below the chief above him. He was just more of a consultant chief. Not below him, not below him. The chief seeks this chief for guidance and wisdom. That's what a Sagamore is. It's all pomp and circumstance, but what isn't in, today's world? The Sagamore of the Wabash is a title that I would like to take, and I just wanted to put it on your radar. Sagamore of the Wabash, it's out there. Go get you one. There's not a Sagamore of the Wabash named every year, but there was one just named last week. And I want to say props to you, Craig Alaback. I don't know any other information about you but your name and the fact that you were town manager of Winona Lake, Indiana. Credit to you, sir. Congrats on your Sagamore of the Wabash title. You now get to join the hallowed halls, along with the likes of Garfield and Jim Davis and Mary Beth Schultz and Frank Schilling and Lori Burns McRobbie. Oh, look at that. Yeah, McRobbie's wife won it. All right. That was your Hoosier History. Sagamore of the Wabash. All right, guys. Thank you so much for giving me the time out of your day. Yes, I apologize. You guys, I got through this one, okay? I'm coming off of a bachelor party last weekend, 3 days without internet because of the outage. Affecting me to that core, which is crazy, which would just made no sense to me and made me infuriated, quite frankly. And then come today, it was my one-year-old's first birthday. And I've just been doing that all day and finally got to start recording here at 9 o'clock. So I appreciate you guys for keeping up with me on this one. And I hope you can join me for the next one. It's going to be like a 2 weeks time. I'm going here on a family vacation to Colorado. It's going to be a good time. Meeting some family, nothing but fun. Fun and sweat and hiking and... I like NCAA 25. But no, it'll be a blast. I hope that you can tune in back to the show when I'm back here in 2 weeks' time. Hopefully I can get someone on. If not, hey, I'll just be shooting the shit about Indiana basketball as I always do, even if it's by myself. So you and yours have a great summer, Hoosier fans. Hey, it's getting to the dog days of this sports where we don't have it. Eventually, it's coming around the corner. It'll be here shortly, guys. Football's almost here, and then as soon as college football comes, you blink, and then basketball's here. So let's just put our heads down and get through it together. God bless you and yours, Hoosier fans. You take it easy. Have a great one. Lux at Veritas. Down with the... Yeah, there ain't nobody right now. Up with y'all. Up with you. Take it easy. Ooh, also, if I told you that I had a hat coming your way, I am sending them out this week. So, get ready. Bye.